Do we recognize a moment of grace when it happens in our lives? And if so, how does that grace transform us? These seem to be the lingering questions behind Luke's story of the healing of the 10 lepers. This is another gospel story about how we understand our lives. Michael Limbaugh suggested once that it implies two fundamental ways of being in this world. One assumes that my life and all that fills my life are simply what I'm more or less entitled to. You can only guess that those 9 lepers who disappeared from view without so much as a thank you, sir, honestly felt that good health was their right and had been a long time coming. It's not gift. They simply had what was owed to them. The Samaritan leper who returns and drops to his knees before Jesus is a living emblem of the other demeanor toward being. His thankfulness is actually a fundamental attitude that says, here I am, alive and whole. I might never have been, but here I am. I did nothing to deserve life. It is a gift. It is a grace. Now, of course, very few of us actually fall into one camp or the other very clearly. Sometimes we're overwhelmed by the giftedness of life, and at other times we find ourselves consumed by concerns about fairness and senses of entitlement. Sometimes we recognize the grace for what it is, and sometimes we don't. Henry Ward Beecher, that acclaimed 19th century Brooklyn preacher, employed a striking image to describe what it means to live a life of gratitude. Suppose, he said, someone gave you a dish of sand mixed with fine iron filings. You look for the filings with your eyes and you comb for them with your fingers in the sand, but you can't find them. Then you take a tiny magnet and you draw it through the dish, and suddenly the magnet is covered with iron filings. The ungrateful person, he said, is like our hands combing the sand. Such a person finds very little or nothing to be thankful for. The grateful person, on the other hand, is like the magnet sweeping through the sand. That person finds hundreds of things to be thankful for. More recently, the contemporary poet David White says, gratitude is not a passive response to something we've been given. Gratitude arises from paying attention, from being awake in the presence of everything that lies without and within us. Indeed, the recognition of grace is not so much a matter of how much one has. We've all known people who had almost everything they could ever want or need and yet lived with some great emptiness in their lives. And we've known others who seemed to have less than a little, whose lives nonetheless demonstrated a remarkable peace and contentment and fullness. 10 lepers, 10 outcasts, forced to live at the outskirts of humanity. The diagnosis of leprosy in those days, you should know, in many ways was a sentence to exile. Clothing affected by leprosy was burned. Houses afflicted with leprosy were torn down. People beset by leprosy were avoided, as the saying goes, like the plague. 10 lepers begged Jesus for mercy. And Jesus, skipping the pastoral care this time, says, go and show yourselves to the priests. And all 10 respond by going as they've been told, by obeying Christ's command. All 10. And along the way, down the road of obedience, all 10 are healed. All 10 find themselves wearing new skin, as it were. Naturally, says Paul Duke, if they are ecstatic and they do what any of us would do if headed down a highway with a brand new life, they accelerate. Jesus told them to go, and in the going they were healed. And what are new feet for if not to sprint to the finish of what we're commanded to do? To the priest then, and step on it. But one of them stops. overcome by his new possibilities, overwhelmed by an unexpected gift. In such a state, he discovers something more important than obeying the instructions he's been given. He follows his heart instead of the instructions. He needs to express his gratitude. He needs to offer his praise. And so he wheels around and runs back to Jesus, praising God with a loud voice, and falls at the feet of Jesus, offering his thanks and his praise. That this man is a Samaritan and not a Jew is surely a point that Luke wanted us to note. For throughout Luke's gospel, it is the marginalized outcast, like the Samaritan, who recognize Jesus for who he truly is. The outcast is the one who sees and who responds freely to the grace he has experienced. He's the one who improvises his gratitude and praise, if you will. Baptist scholar Paul Duke once said that praise is the jazz factor of faith, that praise is love improvising its answer to love. When one is learning to play an instrument, one first has to learn the basic fingering and, with some instruments, the discipline of breath control. First pieces of music are relatively uncomplicated as one learns to transfer the notes that one sees on the score to the breath or to the fingers, and ultimately into simple melodies. Over time, the melodies may become more complex, requiring more intricate dexterity and coordination. Some musicians become remarkable technicians, learning to play flawlessly and with great passion. And a few of them will discover a capacity to internalize the score, to sense deeply its ebb and flow, and then to float free of the score, improvising as they go, retaining the theme, but enriching it with their own grace. In a sense, I think, that's what the Samaritan leper did. Jesus gave all 10 lepers a score and a script to follow. He gave them a simple song to sing to the priests, and all 10 went their way rehearsing. But one of them heard something in that melody, heard a different strain than the others, and he began to improvise on the theme. And back at Jesus' feet, the song he sang was one of improvisational gratitude. I've known others who've gotten caught up in such jazz. I know a man who miraculously survived a horrific automobile accident, who found his life and his relationships forever altered by a profound gratitude for that gift of life, and who improvised a new graciousness about his life. I watched an African woman in an outdoor worship service in a Ghanaian village in West Africa who had no gift of money or produce to bring as an offering, who improvised a dance of thanksgiving and praise. I know a couple whose only daughter was born with severe disabilities, who accompanied her through years of special medical expenses and demanding regimens of care, and who nonetheless saw her and treated her as such a profound gift of God's grace, noting improvisationally more than once, "Every day is a blessing." Doubtless some of you could tell your own stories of your own lives and the deep reservoirs of God's sustaining grace. You know what it is to be grateful, even in the midst of great loss or grief. And so you know what the singer-songwriter Jack Johnson meant some years back when he sang, "We've got everything we need, and everything we need is enough." You know the enduring presence of God's grace and sufficiency. And the songs you sing are songs of improvisational gratitude. When I'm at my best, I can improvise such praise. When I'm at my best, even simple daily occurrences can stir such feelings. The laughter of my grandchild, a sunset full of orange and yellow, a warm bowl of oatmeal on a crisp autumn morning. Just have to envision that for a little while here. Safe transit through heavy traffic, perhaps, or an unexpected act of kindness, or a deep pedal note on the organ that makes the windows rattle and my heart stir. or a disagreement settled and resolved. When I'm at my best, I can improvise praise and gratitude for such moments. At other times, though, I have to confess that I find my senses dulled by routine, or my conscious thoughts consumed by those things that cause anxiety, sometimes by pettiness or envy, by expectation or demand. In those days, I do well simply to follow the score. And by the score, I mean the commands of God for faithfulness and for honesty, for treating others with respect, for demonstrating kindness to my neighbor. Sometimes just following the score seems like burden and demand. And in those days, I look around for any reason or incentive to be grateful. While I was completing my final seminary courses 100 years ago or so, I was invited to join the seminary's development staff for a year or two. My supervisor in those days was a man whose name was also Bob, and that Bob had a sign on the wall behind his desk, a clever takeoff on a familiar biblical passage. It said, "Remember, that which you render unto God is deductible from that which you render unto Caesar." And that sign was right, of course, and its maxim has undergirded congregational giving in American churches for many decades, at least right up to the passage of last year's tax bill. I don't suppose I need to tell you that there's a lot of hand-wringing and worry out there among churches and religious and nonprofit agencies about the effects that legislation may have on their congregational or institutional giving patterns. And the concern may be legitimate if indeed far fewer Americans choose to itemize their charitable giving and deduct that which they render unto God from that which they render unto Caesar. But Bob's sign and the question about deductibility have actually highlighted an underlying problem with the way far too many American Christians have calculated their tithes and their offerings. For too long, we have thought more about how those gifts could be leveraged for our benefit, more about our line in the score than about the way our gifts might demonstrate a capacity for deep, deep praise and gratitude and thanksgiving. When I'm at my best, as I said, I can improvise such praise. But sometimes I think too much about the cost or the inconvenience or the deductibility, and just following the score seems like burden and demand. And in those days, improvisational gratitude seems beyond my reach, at least without some help. There's an old story about a renowned pianist and composer, a grand one who lived at the beginning of the last century, and a lovely thing that happened at the start of one of his concerts. At that particular concert, a woman and her young son came to hear the master play. The young boy had only recently begun his piano lessons, and the mother, wishing to encourage his studies, brought him to the concert. The two were seated just before the curtain was to open, but the mother spotted a dear friend along the aisle just a couple of rows back and went to speak to her, telling her son to remain in his seat until she got back. But then, what child likes to sit still? Seizing the moment of opportunity to explore a bit, the boy made his way down his aisle and down the side aisle through an open curtain in the doorway and disappeared. The house lights began to dim, and the mother returned to her seat, discovering as she did that her son was not there. And as you can imagine, she panicked and began frantically looking all around, not paying attention to the curtains beginning to open on the stage. But at the laughter of the audience, she looked, and there, seated at the magnificent Steinway on that stage, was her son. Haltingly playing the first song he had learned to play, Mozart's little melody, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. The mother was horrified, and she started to get up again, but at that moment, the great pianist himself entered on the other side of the stage, put his finger to his lips to still the audience. He moved to the piano and whispered in the boy's ear, and the boy kept playing, and then the master reached down with his left hand and added a little bit of a bass part to the composition. Soon his right arm reached around the other side of the child and added a running obbligato. And together, that old master and this young novice transformed an awkward moment into a moment of grace, and they finished playing to thunderous applause. You know, the melody of gratitude is not always easy. We sometimes play it haltingly, and sometimes we're undone by our own pettiness and insecurities and fears. We may at times feel more like humming dirges of lamentation to ourselves, but by grace, sometimes we hear whispers of remarkable encouragement, whispers to us to keep playing. And as we do, in grace, God extends and complements our own best efforts, transforms us in ways we've never dreamed possible. That's grace at work, friends. And when it touches us, maybe we see something that others, like the other nine, miss. We see that life is a gift, despite all of its tragedies and troubles and lost tax advantages, that this very day is a gift, and that our life's simple melody is never sung a cappella, never played alone, but is always accompanied fully and richly. And those like the Samaritan leper who see in such a way cannot simply keep moving down the path they've been traveling, because what stirs in them, seeing what they see, is improvisational gratitude and praise. What stirs in them is pure jazz. And I tell you, it is music to God's ears.